I just want to say, you did a very good job. So good job.
It's that thing where you're actually kind of smart. Things you say make you sound dumb.
Yeah, we both do that.
What's that called?
Nope.
Yeah, but you're a little different, Dad.
Stop saying sure! Oh, it drives me crazy! Are you seeing
clear? Are you seeing clear? I think most people just ignore the tough question. This isn't Minecraft. This is real life.
You are hilarious.
That was not the dog, Dad. That was you.
Yeah, to solve this, we have to completely ignore the main problem.
That makes literally no sense to me. I just want to die.
And that, my friend, is one of my favorite things about you.
Hey, welcome to Renaissance Radio. I asked Danny a question like literally as it ended, and yeah, I'm trying to answer that. Hilarious. Hey, welcome to Renaissance Radio. I am so excited to have Danny here today. Danny's been a friend for a long time, almost too long. Like I've said this before, you may have heard me say this before, but it's hard to be friends with people from your childhood, especially if you were an idiot for any series or of time during that time. Would you find?
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. And so childhood friends, you have an amazing core group of childhood friends. I mean, the Barlow Woods family is just unbelievable.
Still going strong.
That's right. And so I kind of ducked in and out of that, but I just am so grateful for Danny and his family. Sierra, his wife, has been a great blessing to our family, and we have kids similar age. But Danny is one of the filmmakers, among many other things, one of the filmmakers with the Renaissance Agency, and I'm so grateful to have him as part of the team. He has a very robust and exciting freelance career. He's also worked with many other film houses, and he's also done tons of things like documentaries that you definitely have to see. We'll definitely put those as a list of resources there. And then also, he's done some political work that we definitely need to talk about. What would you say, just off the top, before we even get into it, in levels of, we'll do it this way, in levels of difficulty, starting with number one, of all those things I listed, what is the by far the most difficult?
As far as politicals versus
political, documentary, commercial work. You did a couple weddings.
Yeah. weddings, we're going to, that's not even, we're going to
yeah
that because that's a given. Probably, man, documentaries are rough just because they're long term, I think. And then you just got to stick with it. The music videos are really hard.
Music videos are hard. Yeah. I think probably because you're working with talent, and when by talent you would define talent as people acting or performing in some way, and the talent has often a very good understanding of their own vision in music,
right?
But it doesn't always translate to our discipline,
and they have no visual money.
And they have no money. Now, of course, if you're calling Renaissance as a band because you want to make a music video, you need to have some money. I just want to put that out there. In the early days, there was no money stuff. That's not what we're talking about today. You're going to have some money. But man, Danny, just such a good friend over the years, a faithful friend, and definitely really, I would say, a resilience around your craft that's been incredible. I mean, just... it would be hard for me to separate you from the word filmmaker. I mean, it just, you've done everything related to filmmaking, right?
Besides going like the big films, yeah.
Well, just scale. I mean, there's feature films, blockbusters, you haven't done that, but there's not a lot of difference in that other than scale and maybe the size of the team and the size of the production. And I think you could do that probably with the right team around you. And so, man, such a cool thing. We'll probably have you back. I hope I'm already enjoyed this episode. So far, both intros and I just have to say it because it's going to be relevant to our stories today as filmmakers. I forgot to hit the record button. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Can I just say right up front here? I'm so embarrassed about that. Can I just say right up front? That's such a normal type thing to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
In film and in, hey, what are your thoughts on forgetting to hit the record button? Now, if you're watching right now and you're not in this world at all of production of any kind, you go, what an idiot. And that's the right response. What an idiot is the right response, right? You have one thing you do before everything starts, which is hit record. But Danny, what is not hitting record or battery or card or any number of the things that could ruin everything? What is it like? What's that is it anxiety? Yeah, what is it?
You want to just crawl under a rock. I mean, it's not, thankfully it happens, you know, one time it happens. Okay. Maybe you're shooting B-roll type of thing or whatever, but it's usually sometimes the worst would be a documentary where it's like one take. That's it. You don't have any more.
Yeah.
And it's only happened to me once with that.
Specifically not hitting record.
Correct.
Okay.
And I immediately, within a few seconds, I'm like, something's off. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. What's, no red light, you know. But thankfully, from what I remember, this might have been 4 or 5 years ago.
Do you remember which project? Is it something you can tell us?
No, I think it was...
We don't know because you didn't record any of it.
Yeah. No, it was overseas. I just remember that. And I... Oh. Yeah.
So Lake Erie, Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Overseas. Hey, look, when... by the way, Danny's legitimately a traveled, well-traveled filmmaker. But in business, it's so funny. I was listening to some guys today... And really, really sincere guys. They were great. But just talking about the millions of dollars worth of accounts they worked on and all these different things. And it's so funny in business to hear the posturing that you inevitably have to do, right? Like,
yeah.
No big deal. I worked with a 7-figure studio. And it's like, yeah, you printed the tickets for Pixar's event, you know, and you were working at the Kinko's at the time. You didn't actually do the design. And we've all done that early, especially early in our career. I think where that runs into trouble is when you... are purposefully misleading your scope of your role. And especially when you get caught and you get hired for something, I've seen that happen before where designers, you know, maybe borrow elements on their front end because they trace it or whatever. And then they try to figure it out and you go, this is not the same quality at all. Have you seen that in filmmaking at all where people
it's
fake it?
It's called fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend that. Honestly. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I've done that maybe twice early on.
Yep.
And you find out and you're like, I am way over my head. And then, you know, it's a small world as far as production.
That career.
Yeah. You know? And so you can be depends on how bad of a job you screw up.
Yeah. But
you don't want to do that.
Yeah. I think you got to think about the consequences. When I think of my kids, you know, the obvious thing is like, well, they might get hurt doing that. And I'm sorry if I've already shared this in a previous episode, but it's just very foundational for me. I don't really think about the likelihood that they'll get hurt. I think of the consequences when they get hurt. So if there's a 0%, like a 0.011, you know, percent chance that they'll get hurt, but it'll be fatal, we're going to not do that.
Right.
But if there's a 99% chance they're going to fall off the balance beam and the likelihood that it's even minor is low, let's let them fall. Like, let's do it. So if you're getting into jobs, and I'm a big fan of being overly confident early on, because of the amount of resources we have generationally, like we can get on YouTube and we can learn things, but just communicate it. Like when I'm talking to you right now, I have a long history in kind of rapid deployment of production, but I'm telling you, this interface is new to me. This is not something I'm going to coach on right away, but I'm going to learn this and we're going to have a production team that does this and they will eventually very quickly be able to help you start your podcast. But right now, like there's going to be things like forgetting to hit the record button. I did an episode recently where I've worked with a lot of soundboards, but the gain was a little bit low on my mic, but the volume on the headphones compensated for it, so I didn't notice it. So there's like little things like that. If you fake it on something where somebody's using their money, especially a documentary or
documentary, that's actually not, because documentaries are so, you learn as you go sometimes.
Yeah.
And
there's
biggest thing is
too, to tell the story.
A little bit, yeah. But the where you don't want to fake it is commercial. You know, you show up, I one time I said, hey, I can do audio.
Yeah, what's the difference?
The difference? It's like, you know, I got a boom, you know, all that stuff. I got a mixer.
I do audio on my videos all the
time. I have YouTube. I can look up what the mixer does.
Speaking of checking my gains and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. You know, there's things like you shoot at your first wedding and it goes well. That's one of the worst things that can happen because it's like it goes well, but the next wedding's in a dark lit place and there's actually legitimately no way your camera can stretch.
Yeah.
Like, and you don't have your flash and you don't know how to use it and you're just done. I'll tell you, this was really funny. Do you remember the story of the wedding that I slipped and fell?
Sierra told me to mention that to you.
You're a jerk, first of all. I hope you're listening and I hope you feel my animosity towards you for bringing up that memory. She's like, this will hurt him. Let's tell that story. And in fairness, she deserves to zing me a couple times. No. I was at a wedding, and it was in South Carolina, and I was seasoned at the time. I mean, I was skilled and very confident and comfortable and had two cameras. I was carrying one on my back. So I had backup gear, backup cameras, all this stuff. Oh my gosh. And I just remember I literally still remember the feeling as if I'm there, and I slip on some moss. I'm in a mountain. It's this beautiful place. and I'm like up on a mountain and there's the reveal. So the bride is going to see the groom and vice versa for the first time in their outfits.
Yeah,
so it's kind of funny. Yeah. It's like they've met. These aren't arranged marriages. Like they know each other. They've seen each other in a lot of different outfits. They're very fond of each other, but they haven't seen this outfit. So it's like the reveal of the outfit. And so, the first look of the outfit. I shot your wedding, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I wasn't better, but I think they were really good at the time.
What, my pictures?
Yeah. I was really happy with them.
I was actually saw them the other day. I'm like, oh, that's
good. I think they hold up.
Yeah, they
do hold up. But I'm just saying, like, I kind of wish my friends had got married at the end when I was my best.
Got it.
You know what I mean? I wish you were married less time.
Right.
So, you know. But anyway, I have slippery dress shoes on because dressing appropriately for the weather, nobody's going to be impressed with that. You have to wear dress shoes on a mountain. So I slip on the moss straight up like a cartoon, legs overhead. And of course, I had the presence of mind to swing my camera down as hard as I can to catch myself and smash it on the rocks. And then there was this like slow motion moment where, I'm glad you're enjoying this. There was a slow motion moment where I slide down. I'm sliding slowly, but there's no traction. I don't know if you've ever been in a truck and it just, all of a sudden you lose traction. You're like, oh, I'm going as far as gravity will take me. But you're not in a hurry. You're just sliding. You can't stop. I'm doing that on my back. So I'm sliding down and I land. Fortunately, the two things that caught me were the camera in my hand and then the camera on my back. So I caught myself with like, I don't know.
So did you 10, lose both 12, cameras?
Oh, both went down.
Oh, I thought it was just one.
Oh, no. I cracked them open like a set of walnuts and opened up the electronics with the smashing and then proceeded to slide down into the pool of water below to submerge my cracked cameras there. So someone at the wedding had a Canon Rebel.
Nice. Okay.
And so I shot a wedding at Canon Rebel. Now, mind you, I probably had been on stage at a conference talking about how the gear doesn't matter and lying to young photographers like for like 4 hours. I probably was flown out to lie to them and tell them gear didn't matter. And I believed that gear didn't matter until I had to shoot a wedding with no backup with a variable lens, with a variable aperture zoom lens.
Right.
That had a ISO cap of like 1200 and that was grainy. And I'm shooting it on the micro SD card or whatever. And it's like action mode is like film.
It's like one every, you can take a picture every second or so.
And to be honest, I nailed it, but it's
a lot of noise reduction.
Oh, I hated every second of it. And it was terrible. I mean, it was just, I had to fight just to pull it off. Like there was no way to make it what it could have been. But I pulled it off and it was bad. So then I went back to the hotel and, you know, if you've listened to From the Middle podcast, I already told this story, but I guess they're called palmetto bugs. They're not cockroaches, but evidently.
But not bed bugs.
No, they're cockroaches. They're giant cockroaches that you only get in Ohio if you're like in a condemned building. But they're normal. So I take it down like I'm revealing this big thing to them, like, hey, you're in trouble here. And they're like, oh yeah, it's just a palmetto bug, you know, and I'm just like, great. So anyway, that was horrible. I seem to remember something about a sandbag or that maybe one of your grips at one of your jobs. A grip, what's a grip?
Grip is basically you've got, depends on the size of the crew, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? So let's just say I typically normal probably 10 people are on a crew on the shoots that I'm on.
Okay.
So there might be like a
political documentary, commercial. Okay.
Yeah. So grip is just moving.
I've never shot with a team of 10 in my life.
Huh?
Never shot with a team of 10 in my life.
Yeah. It's fun. It's a good number.
Yeah.
So
that's great. So you're on the shoot and what happens?
So this was the last year actually.
That was recent.
That was recent.
Okay.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
No, he just like, he didn't put enough sand on, and then somebody, it was a menace arm, which is...
Wait, hold on. Put enough sand on. What are the heck enough, are you even talking
there's
about?
Sandbags, you know. They're like 25-pound sandbags.
So if you look at, if you're watching on YouTube channel, these are straight up and down, but if you had a boom mic arm, it would be holding the microphone, and the thing would be off-center and would tip 100% of the time if it's not weighted. So they put sandbags on... And what's always at the end of the sandbag is something very expensive.
Oh, something expensive or just can hurt you.
Yeah.
It falls on your head.
So he didn't put enough sand on.
Well, he didn't put enough sand on. And then also, it's called a menace arm. It's just an arm that comes out and it was holding a light above everybody.
Yeah.
Well, the arm swung over to where it went between the two legs. And so it, you know, tipped that way. And then the top of
it. Okay, so it's on kind of a tripod.
Yeah, it's on a stand.
On a stand, normal stand.
Yeah.
But there's a weak point at the between the two in a sense for balance.
If you don't have no sand.
So it turns out we've resolved that problem over the years.
Yeah. So anyway, it swung around and then it came. I was like at that perfect, you know, angle to where I'm standing here. The top of the stand is up here and it goes right there. Just nailed me right on the side.
Out of nowhere, like the newscaster bloopers where the light just falls out of nowhere and you get hit in the head.
Exactly. And I was AC. I wasn't DP that time. Thank goodness.
Okay. Director of photography and
assistant camera. I'm a caddy to the DP.
Got it. You weren't carrying the responsibility of directing the cameras and everything. You were specifically running A-Rig.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it just right on my head. Next thing I know, I'm like, I'm out. And,
were you guys rolling?
No, we were not. We had just wrapped, thankfully. Okay. And it hit our DP as well. Now, he actually got cut. Like, he got right on the forehead and stuff, but he didn't get knocked out. And he was enough to be, it wasn't enough
you
for him.
You got knocked out.
But I got knocked out. Oh, yeah, because the next thing I know, our makeup artist, because I landed almost in her lap. I landed, and the next thing I know, she's right over top of me, holding my head. And
you
she's like,
she hit you.
Well, you
probably didn't know what happened. Did you see it coming, or
I heard something, and then
what sound does what's it called? A mischievous arm?
A menace arm.
Yeah, that's
very menacing.
Yeah, like clearly. Did you name it after it hit you in the head?
Well, what's funny was I didn't get the name until after that. I'm like, oh, duh.
Yeah. So what sound for a radio audience does a menace arm? Just a lot of swearing. What sound does the menace arm, not the victim? Oh. What sound does a menace arm make? When it's it's actually
really silent.
It's like a swoosh.
It's like a ninja just comes right in. Oh. You have no idea. Yeah. Depends on what's in the end of it, though.
I don't think there's anything here today that can get us.
There's
a tiny menace arm mic stand with the third mic up there, but I don't think it can reach us. Oh, that's terrible. And did he immediately know it was his fault? Or did you have to yell at him?
He was the key grip. So, I mean, he was in charge of whoever.
So anytime any gear malfunctions unstable, the key grip is...
He's the guy that, you know, obviously one of his other guys, there's usually like one or two other guys under him.
Yeah.
I think it was a small enough shoot to where it was maybe him and one other guy that were gripping. And then he owned it right away. He was like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. He didn't say anything.
You don't save money on those guys. No. you just like, that's a fake it till you make it. Like, that's, don't do
well,
that.
Well,
like,
he was... I have to say it was one of those once in a very long time mistakes that he'll never make again.
Yeah.
It just happened. Maybe he got distracted because that's not him. He's been in the business for 15 years.
Total.
Or actually, no, 20 years maybe.
I can kind of empathize with that because when I used to be in sales and I always struggled with like people. It was very regular to lie as a salesperson. Mm-hmm. I remember two times I omitted. I kind of lied when I was younger and it was like, I could have misrepresented something over the years, but I mean, just flat out lying about something to get a sale. There was two situations where someone said something to me and like, it would have really messed things up with that deal. So I just didn't say anything. Mm. Like I kind of purposely omitted it twice in thousands and thousands and thousands of deals. And both times it came back and got me.
Yeah.
Both times, like one time, basically the customer said, I'm like 18 years old. I'm 36 now. I've repented of a lot of things since then. This is one of them. And she said, as she's walking away to go sign the paperwork for the car she bought, I'm 18. She goes, well, as long as it wasn't a rental car.
I remember that story. Yeah. I remember
and,
you.
And yeah. I just went, it's plausible I didn't hear her say that.
Yeah.
And I walk away. Car comes back in, transmission, and none of the cars ever had problems. Comes in, transmission's completely blown out of the thing, and it has Enterprise Rent-A-Sticker car all over the place. And like, I just remember a couple stories like that where like the two times I remember that horrible thing happening were times that I could have been more honest. And it just reminds me of your guy, like the one time he doesn't check the sandbags.
Yeah.
He's actually probably on your top list of hires, would you say?
Oh, yeah. Number one.
He's your number one.
I would, in a heartbeat.
That's how those guys get to be number one, by the way. If you're trying to be number one in a technical job, be the guy that owns the mistake and just does everything not to let that happen again next time. Because, man, I'll tell you what, and actually that's a really good job. If you're trying to get into filmmaking, becoming a grip or getting out there and just saying, hey, I'll help with anything. I'll carry the boxes, kind of a roadie sort of thing for if you can find something like that, minimum wage, and take some weight off, you'll find some really good, I don't know a lot of industries, probably some blue collar industries, but I don't know a lot of industries that are more dependent on consistency mm-hmm. and tricks of the trade.
And apprenticeship.
And apprenticship.
I think apprenticeship is
That's a great point. Insane. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apprenticeship in the filmmaking community is so vital because there's hundreds and hundreds of those little, hey, man, don't do it that way. And sometimes you might not even be able to tell them why. You just go, we just don't do it that way.
Yeah.
And then they go, that's dumb. And a year later,
right.
the grief arm smacks you in the head or whatever. So what about, so you were on a filmmaking shoot, and I remember you'd mentioned once that you were filming around some gangs in
Honduras.
In Honduras, and yeah. you made a bit of a social faux pas. So yeah. set the stage for us. So you're so, sitting.
Tegucigalpa, Honduras, 2017, I think. And we were in this, it's just a poor neighborhood. It's around trash dump community and stuff. And this family's
okay,
house.
Just to be clear, when you say trash dump, you don't mean that disrespectfully in terms of like, yeah, that's sorry. A piece of garbage house.
Correct.
Tell us exactly what was there.
There are, in third world countries, you know, there are trash dumps like you have here. There's no regulation as far as people live on the trash dumps.
Right. And so they use the trash dump as part of the structure to live.
Yes. They eat the food sometimes, a lot of times. And yeah. then they use the recycled material to get money for yeah. food, things like that. So,
and you were there doing a documentary where you were exposing a lot of child yeah, labor.
A lot of child labor, a lot of trafficking. I mean, you name it. It's all there. Drugs.
Anywhere that there's poverty, lack of accountability. Yeah. So kids are scavenging these.
Yeah.
We can talk about that for a minute and then we'll yeah. tell your story. Like, this is a really, I think, a story very close to your heart. You yeah. probably have very specific people you remember from back there.
Yeah.
Have you been in touch at all?
I'm in touch with them. Well, John, my buddy out yeah. in Topeka. I mean, him and I were the first people with Trash Mountain.
Go ahead and plug the project.
Yeah, Trash Mountain Project. That's what I'll they specialize in is, you know, they're a ministry and they partner up with other churches that are kind of already on the ground. And then, basically, you know, help people get out of property, you know.
They also just work like with regulators to shut them down
to an extent. Yeah.
So some degree, whenever to some degree,
because you can't shut them down or they'll just move to something else. Cause right. they got to have some sort of education or some sort of reason to not go back to the trash dump for what
yeah,
they know.
Cause they were putting the ministry, put schools there yeah, yeah. and just stuff schools, like that.
Yeah.
And people were getting crushed by,
oh yeah,
you know,
all the time.
Scavenging. Just really, I mean, we could spend a whole episode talking about the tragedies
it's
affected.
Awful.
Maybe we'll have you back to talk about that project specifically, but
yeah.
So you're there and there's pretty serious gang membership there,
yeah.
like legit, like yeah. not to play around.
Yeah. We had to get permission. MS-13 was the gang that was running the neighborhood. And, thankfully the people that were around us, they kind of grew up around obviously they grew up around their neighbors there. And so they had a little bit of sympathy, right? For their neighbors and for people helping their neighbors type of thing because they grew up there. But they were still tied to MS-13. Therefore, they were gods, quote unquote, you know, and you go to them. We had to ask for permission to go there, that type of thing. And I think it was like day two. And I was just real nervous about them seeing my gear because I had a time-lapse rig. You know, it looks expensive,
yeah,
that kind
guy.
Of stuff. And
robotic time lapse.
Yeah, yeah,
rig.
All that stuff.
And it looked like a spaceship
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
yeah. And so I was setting the time lapse rig up and I'm like, I don't want these two guys because there's two lookouts that I'm seeing that are watching me. Like, they can just.
So you have security, but like.
No, they're lookouts, the MS-13 lookouts. So they're always on the phone telling their higher ups what we're
what's
doing.
What's happening, what's going on.
You know, you're seeing them on their phone texting all the time yeah. like this.
So you kind of had an assigned tail that everybody knew was there.
Yes, we like all knew it was there.
They're almost like a diplomatic envoy that was yes. there to keep.
Keep us in line.
Keep you in line.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And so.
Sounds fun, kids. If you want to be a filmmaker, you can yeah. go to MS-13 country trash dumps and film. If
yeah.
you want.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a rush.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want these guys to see what I have, which stupid me thinking later. I mean, they made us the second we stepped into that area, they knew exactly what we had. I mean, within 10 seconds, we probably, if they really wanted our gear.
Yeah. They could have walked up and
been gone.
Patted you down and looked at said, hold on a second, I'm going to look at this. What are you going
to
do?
I mean, they're armed to the teeth. You yeah. know, all that stuff. They could.
What were they carrying?
Oh, it was like one guy had a revolver and the other guy had some sort of, it was like a nine.
AK or.
Oh, no, it wasn't. No.
Pistols.
It was pistols.
Yeah.
I didn't see any assault rifles or anything like that, but it doesn't matter.
I'm always curious. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, oh, just a pistol, you know, in a violent gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're there and. And so you seem to be cool, and you said, stupid me, like, you're worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I should have known, you know, they already know what I have. Okay, nothing's happened. It's already been a day. Okay, you know, we're probably good.
Just be nice.
And be, you know, don't act like you're hiding stuff, because they can sniff that out. So anyway, I get this door. I found this junk door, and I kind of set it up just right to where the lookouts couldn't see.
So you obscured their view, yeah. And they very clearly recognized you were doing that.
I was doing that to help with a glare that I was getting from the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't say that, but yeah. I was like, okay, maybe if I say that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Which it's a lie anyway, but
poor, not stupid.
Yeah.
Right? They immediately knew what was going on.
They were down there. Next thing I know, they're like right next to me, and I'm like, oh crap. And they have that look of like,
you look like you're being a little sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. Bud. It's like, oh, you think you can do that without asking us?
How was that experience? Just like, had you gotten to know them at all? Had you talked to them, or were they just this like terrifying presence?
I knew that they were there. They were like that vulture or whatever, just waiting type of thing. So surprisingly, I was really calm.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, so one or two things going to go down.
Yeah.
Obviously, right. I'm going to die, or they're going to let me go. We're at this point now. So they basically said,
you probably tried to de-escalate.
Yeah.
And it was clearly not aggressive.
We had a translator. I had to come over. And they're like, hey, what's going on? Why did you do that? And I was like, oh, you know, the glare. Which again, I shouldn't have lied, but I had, you know.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done it to being a
Yeah.
And the glare, basically. Yeah. And they said, they clearly didn't believe me, which they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And they just were like, do anything else. Oh, what'd they say? You do it again or do something else and we'll kill you. And they were like, looked you right in the eye. I'm like, yeah, you will. I know you will.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, all right.
No concerns with me.
I apologize.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Well, don't you feel stupid telling that boring story after hearing about how I slipped in dress shoes? Like, I mean, you know what I mean, Danny? Like, I brought you on the show because I thought you'd have something interesting to say. And like, I don't know if you were, like, I don't know if you understand that I was wearing dress shoes and I slipped. Okay.
You could have sprained your ankle.
I could have hurt a lot of things.
Could have got
Danny.
Leeches.
I could have hurt a lot of things. And you're over here like, oh, some guys with guns said I will kill you if you move this door again. Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't have any stories left. I'm shutting the show down. Hey, I was going to say, if you're on YouTube, you can see this. If not, we've got these like frosted glasses. These are not, this sounds like an ad, like a random ad. Hey, have you seen frosted glasses from what? But aren't these kind of neat?
Yeah.
And they have cities on them and stuff. I've been collecting these as a travel a little bit. They're from the 50s and they're like a travel meeting, like thrift shops and stuff. But it's been fun because we have a bunch of them. And then when someone comes over to the house, like one person will be Georgia and one person's Florida.
I don't get to take it home?
No, you can't. No, the show's not. There's no sponsors.
Okay.
Like I got to keep my cups. My family will. They're going to look at me and go, I'll kill you. Which is very similar to this boring experience that you had. So, I'll list off a couple things that I remember over the years, and then I think we just need to keep hearing these stories because these are like really fun. I remember you said that you had was it the talent that said you couldn't tell them what to do?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because
no.
Okay.
The producer.
So you went to a job. Well, to keep this one short, but you went to a job, and the producer said what? Because of your race.
Because of my race. And the subject was just a minority.
Yep.
I was not allowed to tell that person what to do for the B-roll.
I see. So no direction whatsoever.
No, because of your race. White.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's an odd experience. That's not common.
Yeah.
You've worked with people from everywhere, of all creeds, all backgrounds, and that's not a normal experience whatsoever.
Not at all.
Okay. No. That's an odd one. I have to hear about the Mojave F-16 incident.
That's probably the craziest story.
Okay. No pressure, but non-life that last story threatening. Sucked. Yeah. Like, so let's pick it up a notch.
This one's a little more fun.
Okay. So. Yeah. No, it was fine. It just was really boring and none of us can imagine how scared. I'm kidding. That's insane. I can't, I feel like we could just end the show right here. Hey, if you move those doors again, or if you do anything like that again, I'm going to kill you. It's not for parents who were considering getting their kids into filmmaking and now decided that they're not going to. That's not a common experience, being like threatened death with.
Well, you
don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on where you are, right?
Okay. Don't let your kids do it. Shoot it's local. Very dangerous. Yeah. Shoot local. Yeah. Okay. So F-16.
Yeah. So, 2 years ago, I think 2 years ago we were out in the Mojave Desert, and I was just hired to do just drone. So I had, what was it, Phantom 4?
I got to ask this really fast. I'm sorry. I know it can be exhausting when you jump in, but just in general, can you give us an overview very briefly of what it looks like, what a team looks like? So, because you're saying AC and sometimes your grip and sometimes you're running one operator. What's just a basic overview? List off some things that are important.
So I'll do basically size of 10.
General.
Yeah. This is the general size of a crew that I normally work with. Anything more than that, I start to get kind of, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
So roughly 10. So you got your producer, director, basically, who does kind of both things. Sometimes they're
that size. They're different. Producer makes sure everything happens.
Correct.
Gets like the project together.
You know, talks to the client, that kind of thing.
Scheduling, meals, closing, everything that needs to be done, they're responsible for. They may delegate, but they're responsible to pull the thing off, basically.
Kind of. I mean, they set everything up, but then they also put on the hat of director.
That's right.
It just depends on the size of it.
But the director is specifically project-based. They're going to make sure that the project gets executed. Producer's kind of making sure everything's there. And a lot of times on a crew of 10, you're going to look at the same guy.
Yeah,
a lot of our projects.
Yeah. I would produce, director, all the same.
I'm producing direct typically on our stuff. We'll bring in directors very frequently also because that's a specific role.
Right.
And then what else? What else happens?
Then you got... Sorry, that was a sushi burp.
Oh, yeah. That was gross. Yeah, for our YouTube audience, you got to see it. The radio audience, you just got to hear it. So then you have...
DP, which is next down, which is director of photography, which is kind of basically the director.
Everything visual, right?
Yeah, everything visual, camera, lenses. And then if the crew's big enough, the DP will have like kind of a right-hand man for lighting. So that's the gaffer. And then under the gaffer is the key grip. And then you've got, I might be wrong here because I never worked with crews this big. It was at Best Boy or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it's similar to other apprenticeship type roles where you essentially have the director is making sure that the finished product is up to snuff. The producer is making sure that everything needs to be done. The director of photography makes sure that everything looks good for the director. And the grips are making sure that the actual tangible physical things are where they're supposed to
stands,
be.
Yeah, stands don't fall on stands, people's heads.
Yes. And so that's kind of the idea. So, and then you have camera operators and things like that. And so like you're certified in Steadicam operation and all these different, that's what makes Danny so valuable is he can jump into many of those roles. He can run a crew of those folks, but also he can run the technical difficult. Like there's still an art and a technical side to running a drone. It's different than running a Steadicam, running a jib, running dollies, running mechanical. Yeah. It's different each time. So sorry to take that segue. I just wanted to make sure that our folks could get a chance to kind of like get a picture of like what kind of world, because a lot of people listening in, I hope, have some sort of thought around like, I'd like to be able to do this maybe at some point. So anyway, okay, I'm back. You're back. So you're running, you're basically the operator for this drone though.
Correct.
On this job.
Yeah. That is the only job I had for this shoot. And the shoot's like a 2-day shoot, 3-day shoot. And it's at Honda, at their test track in the Mojave Desert. So like, we're like Area 51 looking places, like, cause there's no,
are you allowed to talk about it now? Am I getting like some sweet?
No, we can talk about it now. I think it's already,
I was breaking the rules. Yeah. That was so important. Okay. So you're out there in the Mojave Desert for a little company, a local company called Honda.
So, and they've got some sort of a new technology that they are basically going to present to the world. There's a VR crew that is basically setting up their VR camera inside the car. And so it's supposed to be like all the executives, whatever event that they were going to be doing this, we're going to have like VR sets. And so that's beside.
Wait a minute. Point. So this is happening and other people are viewing the experience elsewhere?
Or No.
Inside the car was VR.
That was VR inside the car. But that's obviously they have to edit that later and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's cool.
So cool.
It was really
cool.
So cool. And that all I had to do was drone, which is, you know, I'm hanging out for like 2 days, not really do anything. I'll jump in.
Yeah, no
and just
pressure
help.
Though. But when you do jump in, you got to nail it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And so, the day before the actual shoot, you know, we got a whole day to burn. We're like, I have to test out the drone, my shots that I want to get, all that stuff. And so I grabbed the head of security and we're like, hey, let's go out to the track. And this track is like, it's a couple miles long. It's
for research purposes. This sounds a little bit like the door for Glare.
Danny,
you're kind of a liar. I'm just kidding.
But, yeah, it's their test track. It's oval. it's kind of surrounded by mountains, but it's like, I mean, you're talking a big tract of land.
Yeah.
And just before we went out there, I checked all of our charts for, you know, the drone, make sure we're not in any military zones. Well, we're like 30 miles from a military, an Air Force base. And then there was a no-fly zone that was like maybe a half mile to our south.
What rig are you running?
It was just a small, like it was Phantom, a Phantom 4.
Yeah, Phantom 4. They do cool stuff. Now, was this before or after they started loading those things? They load those flight restrictions in to them now.
Yes. This was just before.
So you were on your own to hope you didn't break any federal laws.
Well, no, that's another thing that I need to I'll bring up. Is so I had my so one, happy. I had several charts that I checked. We had, who was it? It was another guy on the crew. It was another guy on the crew that checked charts as well for me. And just to get two perspectives, so we didn't want to mess around. This is Honda. This is Mojave Desert. We're near Air Force bases, you know, all that. Clear. We're clear. We're by like a half mile to a mile. We're close.
Seems like a lot at the time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so
in the context of flight, maybe not a ton.
No, no. Yeah. Either way, it was stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, so, you know, you're dealing with the military.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
Not
and
stressful enough to not do
I'm it. Like, I was 95% sure I was okay. Like maybe 90%, but yeah. I was pretty sure I was okay. And so we go out to the middle of the track and the Honda guy, he's like, okay, we're good. And so I start to, you know, lift off and everything's going fine. It's probably 2 minutes, 3 minutes in the air. I'm just kind of surveying around. I'm probably about 100 feet up, not far.
Yeah.
And oh yeah. And before that, let me back up. I did get a warning on my controller saying I was in a no fly zone. And I'm like, no, I'm not in no fly.
No, I already checked it.
Yeah. I already checked it.
No big
I
deal,
already,
you dumb little machine.
Yeah. I checked my.
Stop trying to ruin all our fun.
Other apps and stuff. It's
yeah.
Stupid. So I ignore.
Yeah.
And
don't worry about it, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
so,
it.
So I'm up there and all of a sudden I hear a sonic boom. Like it was a boom, shaking your chest kind of thing. And I look up and I'm just going to say it's an F-16.
Sure.
I have no idea.
It was a fighter jet. It wasn't another drone.
It wasn't another drone. Yeah,
but no. It might have been.
Yeah. No, it wasn't because
straight up fighter jet.
It was a straight up fighter jet because he comes in, throws all of his flaps open or whatever and breaks and then banks. And he was so close. I could see the hose coming out of the pilot and the pilot was looking right at us.
Yeah.
And going in circles around
so
us.
So you felt like there was a documentary on Guantanamo. Like is how it felt.
Well, yeah. I don't even remember landing.
Was that scarier? Like just in an initial, that initial rush of I'm in trouble, which was scarier, the gang moment or this moment? Not like intellectually later, you look back and you go, I was actually more dangerous.
This moment was way more terrifying.
Like in terms of visceral fear.
It wasn't visceral fear. It was more like, okay, you know, here's what's going through my head. Yeah. I'm losing my license. I'm getting arrested.
Yeah.
Or I'm getting arrested, then losing my license.
This job is done.
This job's
my career's
done. I'm blacklisted because I got, you know, whatever. It's going through your head.
So you're going through all the possible
I'm
going to
get audited. Yeah.
So being killed was simple, even though it's horrible. No, but seriously, it's one thing. Even though it's horrible, you're like, okay, I'm in physical danger, and it was simple. But in this case, you were running through
I wasn't worried
of the consequences.
Oh, yeah, down the road. Like,
yeah,
all that.
My family's not going to be. Yeah.
It's like they're going to.
What else come am I going to do with my career? They're coming to my house.
Yeah. But, and so I just landed the drone. I don't remember landing the drone. And
like almost like straight down.
Just
like,
straight down. Yeah. I don't even remember landing it. I somehow landed
not
it.
Without mine.
I didn't crash it. And
never seen it, officer.
And so he's going around like three times. One, two, three.
Reporting back.
I have no
the
idea.
Gang members on the phone.
Exactly. And so I'm standing there and I'm like physically shaking because I'm like, my career is over.
Yeah.
That's
and there's
I'm
no
thinking.
Way to really find out. Like when the gang members left, you knew you were okay.
Well, maybe.
I mean until but they like you knew that the situation had, it seemed like they warned
that
you and
that particular
they left.
Situation's probably
were
okay.
Were you carrying dread? How long were you carrying dread around about like, they're going to call back home and they're going to send, there's going to be a car coming.
Yeah. That's, and so I immediately looked to the Honda guy because he was the head of security. And I'm like,
I thought you said we're okay.
I'm like, okay, please tell me that's happened before, you know, all that. And he looks at me and he goes, I've been here 20 years. That's never happened before in my life.
Oh
and I'm
my
like,
gosh.
Or the whole career. And I'm like, and I kind of sat down and I didn't really sit down. I just kind of knelt down. I'm like, okay, all right. Well, this is
look
it.
Look contrite for the fighter pilot.
Yeah. And,
oh,
And then he, clearly the guy felt bad for me because then he looks at me and just started laughing. He goes, actually, they do this often. They use our track as a visual line of sight. It just was literally a chance that that happened when you had the drone up. And so that was it.
Oh, that's amazing, dude. Had I mentioned to you, no, I did. I slipped in a river. dude, that is crazy. And what's crazy about this is like Harlan and Henry and Claire and Cecilia, my kids, are going to listen to this and go, that would have been so cool to see an F-16. But like context is really important.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, that is a terrifying, terrifying experience. What is the craziest thing you've ever seen a client or talent do? What have you ever like cut?
A
like,
client?
So we won't. Yeah. Like, maybe like an interview subject or something like that. Have you ever caught them? Like, has there anything been become awkward or like,
yeah,
maybe you're like, okay, I'll give you an example. I had a prospective client years ago. I'm talking to him and we're bantering and we never ended up working together because he suddenly started spouting off like this insane racist, like crazy rhetoric, like out of nowhere, like super nice guy. Up until that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this guy is like a card carrying like white supremacist. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, hey, I don't think this is going to be a good fit because of the things you just said, and I can't represent you. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. I'm like, I'm going to, like, I was like, I was just like, I'm just going to go. Like, I can't even give you like an exit interview. This is just like, it caught me and it was nothing. I think the reason I bring that up is not because of the subject matter, but because like 10 seconds earlier, I thought we were good. And like, suddenly it's like, oh, have you ever had any like, anything like that where you bump into somebody and you're just like, oh no, 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 we're not.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. And it, and I was, again, I was for this, I just remember, yeah, for this one shoot, I was still an AC on this one. So I didn't really,
you didn't have the authority.
I didn't have the authority
to fire the client.
No, I mean, no. And I'm rarely on those types of shoots where I have the authority. I mean, it's music videos, so, right? I like to work with the crews. And so I go.
Great. So I'm going to be working with these people.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Great.
Yes. That's why I. Yes.
Yeah. We'll be. High five. Yeah. Perfect. So you have one in mind. You have a story in mind.
Yeah. So I was going into the guy. The subject had arrived. He was very wealthy, type of person. He had the money, kind of thing. And he orders like a pap. Was it Pappy? No. Pabst Van Winkle. No. What's the super expensive bourbon? Pappy Van?
Oh, yeah, Pappy's, I think.
Yeah, Pappy.
We'll have to look it up, but it's like artificially inflated and it's expensive. It's ridiculous.
It's
like crazy expensive, but it's just because it's very exclusive and you can't get it. But it's not like, yeah, anyway, that's a whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that's, you guys are gonna,
you just can't get it. You can only get it on the black market.
No, it's just super expensive.
Okay,
I got anyway, it. He orders one of those, goes into the bathroom, and it was a large bathroom.
Yeah.
So we're waiting, and I'm like, I gotta go. So I might as well go in there. And he's doing a line of coke.
Are you kidding me?
And I'm like, I walk in, I'm like,
wait, how was he related to the shoot?
He was the interview, like we were interviewing
he's
him.
He's the subject of the
correct.
So, you walk in and he's bumping coke.
Yeah, yeah. And so
you're gonna interview this guy. So
I go, I don't remember what I said. I was just kind of like, I probably did some sort of a weird voice thing and just kind of said sorry
like,
and left.
Like you picture Zooey Deschanel like tap dancing out of the room. like what do you do?
Yeah.
And he saw you see him. So you couldn't slip.
Yeah. And it's like, what are you going to do? I'm the AC. He's the rich millionaire client.
Bajillionaire.
Yeah. And I'm like, I just kept my mouth shut. What?
Yeah. Till now, buddy. Yeah.
No, as far as, it wasn't like the crew was going to, it might have been in danger. You might have flipped out. I don't know. I did tell the DP.
Yeah. You didn't feel an ethical obligation back at that time.
To say, hey, he's got if he had stuff and a gun in his pants, then that would have been different.
Quick note to Renaissance crowd. We're going to fire you if you bump coke on our shoot. Just so you know, it's not a good fit for us. If you hire us to do your work and you bump coke in the bathroom, we're not going to continue.
No.
That is an unbelievable, that's another experience where you walk in and there's that startle moment, right? So you have a jet flyover, you have gang members, and this is one of those ones, you're not in danger. You can always run down the road of like, well, what if he gets in his car? And like, that's always possible though, right? Like people abuse prescriptions and things like that, and they drink a little too much and stuff. But like, you're still startled because you're now in the social setting where you're just like,
And I don't think quick on my feet with that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love those situations. I know, I'm not glad they happen, but
I know, but I know that we are 100% opposite in that kind of a situation.
Yeah.
So I just like went back and, you know, told the VP and just, he was
somebody
like,
somebody thought they saw me bumping coke one time. This is a true story. And if you know me, you know, I don't do coke and I would never would. Cause that is dumb. Like that is not a drug that would fit with me. That was so stupid. So when you're on a shoot, we're not going to be crass here. We have, it's not a dirty thing. It's just a topic that's a little bit off color in terms of like, it's anyway, it's like dirty socks, like that kind of sort of conversation. But when you're on a shoot and you're on a shoot for 10, 12 hours, don't say it. We have a name for like, sometimes you get like really sweaty. And in general, you get, we have some really funny, we'll put it on the blog. That'll be, then it'll be optional to see. But there's names for like chafing and getting sweaty. It's a very real thing. If you're on a 10 or a 12 hour shoot and you know, you're working under hot lights, you don't always have control of your settings. You can't always go outside and fresh, you know, you can't freshen up. You really should take a shower or two sometimes on these shoots. You're in the Mojave Desert, whatever. And so something that's very common for us is that we'll use powders and stuff. You know, people use deodorant and they'll use powders as deodorant and stuff. Well, I'm a little bit hyper and crazy already. And I go to the bathroom mid wedding. I kid you not. And I powder up and reasonably this person sees powder falling from the bathroom stall and then sees me coming out going, ugh, what a crazy day, huh? And this lady goes straight to the bride and groom and goes, your photographer was doing coke in the bathroom. So I don't know how many people she told, but I had to literally take my ditty bag. You remember, I would always pack. We'd have sewing stuff in case there was a rip stuff. We had antacids. We had, you know, just batteries and just everything. And so I had to actually go to them and go, hey, somebody just accused me of doing cocaine in the bathroom. I just want to show you, like.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't want to show a client that I had to, like, use powder, like, because I'm sweaty.
Was it that monkey butt powder stuff?
Oh, that's the name of the, yeah.
Was we have it? Other.
No, it wasn't that brand, but it was, you know, Gold Bond or something like that. But in general, that's a method to keep yourself from being in too much pain on these shoots and for long days. And so, yeah, so actually probably there might be a podcast out there somewhere where someone's falsely accusing me. Are you sure he wasn't just chafing, you know?
Right.
And in his nose. So, yeah. But what do you do? Like, how do you prove? In both cases, what do you do? Do you approach the guy? Of course not.
No.
And then in this case, what do you, like, how do I go around to all the people? So anyway, if you've heard the story of Jeremy doing that, I've done a lot of things, but that ain't it. And hilarious. Hey, this has been really great. I'd like to have you back for a part two, if that's okay. Let's take a breather. We're at 47 minutes and super fun. We'll tell a couple more short stories in part two, but I definitely want to get behind the scenes in the next episode about what it's like to be a freelancer, what it's like to be a filmmaker, specifically in the area of business and some of those challenges, because a lot of folks, maybe you're a baker or you're a photographer, aspiring photographer, writer. You're not sure what to do with your talent. Reach out to Renaissance Agency and let's just have coffee. Let's just chat what you're doing. That's part of what we're doing here is finding artists and craftsmen and techies and thinkers who have talents that are hard to find a place to monetize. And we're going to help you monetize that. This isn't a gimmick. It's literally just like, yeah, maybe if you do this and I will pitch clients your service. I don't care what it is. If you do great work and you're curious. But in this next episode, I'd love to talk about some of those challenges. If you are in any of those other fields, you're going to find some help in hearing Danny's stories and some of my stories around just what it's like to freelance. You know, some of you have never had your own business and it's absolutely terrifying. If you've never homeschooled or been around anybody that homeschools, it seems like an insane idea. If you've never owned a business or been around someone who owns a business, it seems like an insane idea. Where does the money come from? And so we'll talk about some of those challenges, but man, thank you so much for coming on. This has been awesome. I'm going to make sure to hit the